What? What the fuck? What the hell is wrong with this guy?
What? What's happening, Carl? What are you listening to?
Just this audiobook Ellie let me borrow. There's something wrong with the author. It's fucking disgusting. I mean, the whole thing is kind of gross, but this part is just... Ugh, I don't know. Who writes this stuff? Who reads it?
Oh, you're listening to the Kaiju book. I loved that book. Did you get to chapter 25 yet, where he gets all chopped up by a little kid? I loved that part.
What the hell is wrong with you, Donut?
Don't be such a baby, Carl. It's art. If you really don't want to listen to that part, it's okay. You can be a big wuss. Just skip chapter 25A and go straight to chapter 25B and you'll be fine. It is probably the most disgusting part of the story.
I think I will skip it, thanks.
The most disgusting part, not including the donkey scene, I mean.
What did you say?
Nothing.
Chapter 24. One of the oddest consequences of having multiplayers mixed with AI-controlled NPCs in video games was the aspect of regeneration. Players inevitably end up killing everything they can. If the programmers made it so dead NPCs remained dead, certain parts of the game would end up broken. It simply wasn't feasible. I had no idea if the single-player version of Kaiju Battlefield Surgeon had permadeath for NPCs, but I doubted it. With the newest generation of AI-controlled NPCs, the problem was compounded. They remembered. They reacted to both your actions and words. They had distinctive personalities, and as long as you didn't spend too much time with them, they could be indistinguishable from actual players. Most games handled NPC death in different ways. In Dominion of Blades, non-important NPCs came back, but not for 3 days or so. Some of the more unique quest-giving NPCs were so powerful it was practically impossible to kill them. But if you did pull it off, they usually came back right away. In this game, it seemed like essential NPCs respawned almost instantly, and they remembered you had attacked them. I bemoaned this fact now as the high-level cleric I'd shot, Parson Brock, announced loudly that he would oversee young Gulch's attempt at the Sacrament of Amplification in 2 days' time. The semicircle of mechs surrounding me clapped and shouted their encouragement.
Did you think you could shoot your way out of here?
Yeah. That was the plan. I clutched at the neck clamp. My wrists were not bound. My gun was gone. So was my pack. I pulled up the inventory using the menus and received an error.
Weapons, inventory, and spells are unavailable during incarceration.
Would I get them back? Holy shit. If I lost my Epiviper, my money, I'd have to completely start over. Oddly, I had the sense that I could still shoot my grappling hook. I sensed my left hand could still crush almost anything it tried. But I wasn't going to attempt anything with half the town guard surrounding me. What was I going to do? The thought of having to actually go through with this sacrament thing? I wouldn't make it. Not mentally. The death sequence was terrible enough. A cleric stepped forward. He cast a spell, and my pants disintegrated. I felt them sizzle and disappear, leaving my legs exposed.
Your armor has broken.
Fuck. I still wore a tattered loincloth. My boots remained. Oddly, my belt also remained. It felt odd against my bare hip. I watched as a young groundling girl, no older than 3, toddled toward me, holding a serrated knife as long as her forearm. She clutched it uncertainly in both hands. I kicked at her.
Get that thing away from me!
Pastor Brock waved his hand.
You have been paralyzed. You are unable to move.
My body froze in mid-kick. I fell, not quite enough to choke me, but enough to be painful on my chin and the back of my head. I could still move my neck and head, but I couldn't get them in a proper position.
Get the fuck away from me!
you're going to suffer 1,000 years of pain. Did I say it right?
A second cleric stepped forward, putting a stool down on the ground in front of me. The stool was painted in a ladybug pattern. He patted the girl on the head. The child stood on the chair, wavering slightly.
Whoopsie! I almost fall!
Why, you can do it, honey.
The groundling girl stabbed me in my left leg, all the way to the hilt. The jagged knife entered my muscle and bounced off my bone with all the finesse of a chainsaw.
No, no, honey. That's too deep. Pull it out.
Oh, he bleeds a lot. It's stuck.
Aw, let me show you on this leg.
I watched in horror as my health points actually rose. I eyed that second cleric, the one who disintegrated my pants, his hands aglow. The mom pinched a handful of skin on my upturned thigh, the one still raised in a frozen kick.
Don't cut it. We want this skin, nothing else. It's like peeling a fruit.
Gimme!
Aw, so you think you can do it like that?
Fuck! Heal me, Jesus Christ!
The cleric did not heal me this time.
Language! There are children about.
I can do it!
Okay, nice and gentle, all right? Cut down and slow. Remember, like you're peeling a pear. Be careful you don't nick yourself, honey. Gentle, gentle.
Okay, Mommy.
The knife went straight in. But this time it was stopped by the bone.
Whoopsie.
My world was pain. It became my life, my religion, my breath, and my blood. It was all I knew. All I would ever know. After the toddler, older children came. The ones who knew what they were doing were worse than those who didn't because the clerics did not heal me between each proper flaying. Both of my legs looked like one of those shawarma spits, with bits of skin and fat hanging off like paper streamers. An impossibly large pool of blood cascaded off the pedestal and ran into a channel, streaming downward into the temple and toward the dais at the back of the badger's throat. It took almost a full day and dozens of healings for all of the town's children to get their strip of flesh. I watched, dazed, as a group of child groundlings rushed through the streets, waving the skin at each other, shrieking with laughter, pretending like the strips of leather were whips. One child fastened a crude slingshot out of his piece and spent a full hour shooting rocks at my head before one of the mechs finally shooed him away. I spent this time attempting to break my mind in two. Dr. Metcalf had tried to teach me how to do it when I was dealing with Chris. At the time, I had thought the whole thing was stupid. Mary had clutched onto it like a lifeline, though, spending hours meditating. It had never worked for me. But it seemed to help Mary. Not a lot, but during those first few months, anything that eased an ounce of the pain was worth it. The whole idea, to compartmentalize your mind, to be able to dispassionately look at your own situation, it seemed wrong to me. Even if it had worked, it would have been like cheating. I deserved that pain. I needed that pain. Like cauterizing a wound. Besides, Dr. Metcalf's method was a way of dealing with the pain of grief, not physical pain. Still, I clutched onto the idea of being able to dissociate myself like it was the last crumb of food in the world. And it worked. Not like I intended, but by God, it worked. I thought of Chris. I thought of that day. There was no pain that could supersede that memory. None.
Ruth, where are you? You know you're not supposed to leave.
Relax. We're at my boyfriend's house.
come home. Come home right now. Mary is pissed.
Unwad your panties, Dad. Chris is fine. He's asleep. I'll bring him back in the morning. Or you can come get him.
God damn it, Ruth. Get here now!
It was my fault just as much as it was hers. She'd been drunk and high, not in the right mind. I'd ordered her to come home. Mary was pissed. She didn't like Chris leaving the house with Ruth. She'd ended up going the wrong way on State Route 16. She'd collided head-on with another car. Chris. My beautiful little boy. He hadn't even been wearing a seatbelt. The driver in the other car had been injured as well. A teacher. She recovered. But I remembered that day in court. Her staring daggers at us. I couldn't look at her. Ruth didn't have a scratch on her. That memory, reminding myself of that moment when the state troopers came to the door, of Mary falling to her knees, clutching her head, screaming.
This is too much. This is too much.
That was seared into my mind deeper than any brand, any scar, and it burned harder than any physical pain could. But this flaying, the peeling of skin off my legs, this was nothing compared to what was to come tomorrow. Amplification. Damn it, Clara. I wondered if she knew what was going to happen. If not, I wondered what she was thinking right now, speculating why I hadn't shown up. She'd had to have figured it out by now. Maybe they were on their way back to me. Maybe they'd come and save me at the last minute, guns a-blazing. Maybe I'd wake up any minute and realize this was all a dream. It took me a while to realize my legs had been healed and the jeering crowds were gone. I opened one eye to see young Gulch sitting cross-legged in front of me. A single cleric and a single mech stood respectfully back. Gulch rocked back and forth, praying silently. I became acutely aware of my left hand. Assuming my grappling hook worked, I could effortlessly grasp the child, crush him. I dove into my menu, searching for the folder that held my debt notifications.
In exchange for a branding, multiple cybernetic enhancements, and 5,025 teeth, you agree to allow Gulch, the child of Groundlings, Jazz, and Stonegate, to perform the Sacrament of Amplification upon you during the next Hedora at the base of the Temple of Mortazgis in the town of Kinnegad. Note, the debts recorded here are binding and must be fulfilled. Only through breach or inability to perform by the NPC members of this agreement may the debt be cancelled.
Madame Throb had immediately returned when I killed her. If I killed this child, would he come back right away? Could I kill him? Some games wouldn't let you harm children. They already hated me. How worse could it get? Earlier, I watched as the proprietor of a store across from the temple had appended "and worm surgeons" to his "no shade gremlins allowed" sign. What if I did it, and they decided to remove my cybernetics? That would be worse. Then all of this would be for nothing. Still, I had to try. Could they remove my new hand? It was something I bought with actual skill points. Did that make a difference? I decided to wait. It seemed they were done with the flaying for now. All that was left was the amplification. I would wait until the start of the ceremony, and I would kill the child then. I spent the next 24 hours in a constant state of terror and pain. When my mech guard wasn't looking, I attempted to use my powerful left hand to break the rod and chains that held me. It felt as if I was almost strong enough to break the pole, but not quite enough. I devoted some time to reading the menus, and I realized my left hand actually had a 2x strength bonus, so my strength of 15 was actually 30 in that hand only. I still had 4 attribute points from leveling up, and I tossed all 4 into my strength, bringing it up to 19, making my left hand a godlike 38. I tried again, and I felt the pole start to break under my fingers. But then, it stopped.
Self-escape is not possible until your debt is paid or canceled.
Fuck you!
You said a bad word.
Chris said the same thing to Mary all the time. I rarely swore. Mary swore like a sailor with a splinter in her eye.
I'll try to do better.
Gulch nodded solemnly and went back to sleep. A few hours later, I received a strange notification.
Banksy Hookslayer is now level 14. Your familiar is full.
A few hours later, I received a similar notification. Then another. Whatever was happening, it looked like Banksy and Clara weren't just sitting on their figurative hands waiting for me. Also, it was clear that because of the distance, Banksy couldn't talk to me. I wondered how close one had to be before our telepathic link started to work. I clicked over to my experience, and sure enough, it was slowly ticking its way up. My health points in the meantime siphoned away on their own, but the cleric seemed to be aware of the nature of worm surgeons, and I received random healings from my guard. The morning of the ceremony came. Gulch disappeared. Pastor Brock wheeled out what looked like a harness device from some sex dungeon.
You will be strapped into this for the ceremony.
He cast a paralysis spell on me. No, not now. A pair of mechs unhooked my neck and started strapping me into the harness. I was brought from the pole to the center of the pavilion. The entrance to the temple loomed even closer.
Will I remain paralyzed until the ceremony?
Ah, no. But you will be paralyzed again for the first half of the amplification. By the time it wears off, you're usually too weak to move on your own.
He grinned at me, revealing dirty, sharp teeth.
Young Gulch will work his way up your body. By the time your testicles are amplified, most don't have much fight left in them.
As I was placed in the harness, a crowd formed around me. Stonegate and Jazz emerged, sitting in giant chairs atop a litter carried by a group of children groundlings all wearing badger masks. The litter was placed awkwardly on the ground, and the children stood back. The paralysis wore off while the cleric started to chant. The harness left me hanging in the air, a strap around my chest and waist. I could be turned and twisted about like a pig on a spit. I bounced idly up and down on the bungee-like ropes. My vest was removed along with my boots, leaving me in nothing but my loincloth. The moment my vest was removed, I received a notification that my pack lost 50% available storage space. I hadn't enough stuff in there to fill it up anyway. Pastor Brock appeared from inside the temple, holding a glowing red knife in the air. Half the groundlings, including Stonegate, stood and turned, walking into the temple, chanting. I realized it was almost all the males. Those who remained were the children, the women groundlings, and a handful of clerics, both male and female, and a few mechs as well, though all the mech drivers were women. Pastor Brock sat on the dais next to Jazz in the chair Stonegate had abandoned, still holding the electric knife in the air. The badger-masked children stepped forward and picked the litter back up. The children chanted as they raised the dais even higher. The platform wobbled under the weight, and I watched as one of the mechs surreptitiously reached forward to help. From underneath the podium, another child appeared, in a red robe and wearing a badger mask. He pulled off the mask, revealing himself to be Gulch. He took several steps toward me and turned to face his mother and the head cleric. He bowed and started to say something. I had to act now. It was now or never. I reached toward the boy, my left hand outstretched. I clicked my fingers. I fired my hand, and it clamped hard onto the back of the kid's head. The dais came crashing to the ground as the children scattered. Pastor Brock and Jazz both tumbled off and away. He's not dying. His head is strong as a diamond. I retracted, his body heavier than I expected. I pulled the child ruthlessly against the ground as I pulled him to me. He did not die. Damn it. Children are indestructible. A mech guard aimed a gun directly at me. A few clerics cried as well, their hands glowing. Nobody cast or fired anything, afraid they'd hit the child. Children are indestructible. But they don't know that.
Unbind me. Get me out of this thing, or I will pop his goddamn head off.
Mechs and clerics welled closer and around, surging like hornets out of a nest. Pastor Brock stepped forward.
Put the child down, Duke. If you do not, I will cast sleep on both of you, and while you're asleep, I will cut your arm off to free the child. And then I will allow you to remain alive until the next holy day to be amplified again and again.
All of the clerics surrounded me, their hands crackling with spells. This was a bad idea. I looked down at the boy, his eyes wide with terror. I thought of Chris, those moments when Ruth drove the wrong way down the freeway. She said he'd been asleep, but was he really? Had he awakened in those last moments? Did he look up at his sister with eyes like that?
My dad says people do bad stuff when they're scared. I'm scared too.
This is not a real person. This is a computer-generated NPC. But it felt like a real person right then. Guilt washed over me. Like someone had dumped a bucket of cold water on my head. I'm sorry. I loosened the grip. And suddenly, I was hugging the boy. Sorry. You're right. I was scared. We do stupid things when we're scared.
It's okay. My dad says it's coming.
Gulch looked around, meeting eyes with his mom.
It's coming.
Even from across the square, I could see Jazz go pale. What was going on? I looked down at the boy, and his teeth were clenched, his eyes closed. Gulch. I felt a sudden wave of concern for the boy I'd just tried to murder. Something changed. He somehow seemed even heavier than before, his body stiff like a metal beam.
I think he's having a seizure.
Baby! Baby!
Jazz looked up at the clerics, eyes wide with fear as she sat on the ground, her child cradled in her arms.
The demon did this! Damn you! You will pay!
Pastor Brock kneeled before Gulch, putting his hand against the boy's head.
No. This is the agitation. It is not demon touch.
No! No, it is the demon!
I watched as Stonegate entered the clearing. He looked wildly about, his eyes focusing on his wife and child huddled on the ground. The man noticeably sagged, a look of defeat overwhelming him.
The boy is damaged!
Give the worm surgeon to a worthy child.
My Victus is of age and is free from the agitation. He is here and ready to perform the ceremony.
No! No, no, no!
She clutched the boy closer to her chest. Stonegate sat on the ground and enveloped his wife and child with his arms.
You know the rules. Madam Throb.
Step away from the child.
When neither parent moved, Throb took a step forward.
Jazz, you know what must be done.
Stonegate leaped to his feet. The genial, middle-aged groundling held a look of absolute outrage on his face. He had a knife in his hand. It was the same glowing knife Pastor Brock had held earlier. It was the knife Gulch was supposed to use in the ceremony.
You will not touch my child!
Stonegate swung the knife at the mech. Pastor Brock jumped back, his face registering shock. Madam Throb pointed her hand at Stonegate, and skewered him between the eyes. The tableau held for several moments. Throb and Jazz stared at each other. Blood pooled underneath the dead stone gate. Finally, Jazz seemed to make a decision. She took a moment to compose herself. She swallowed and stood, her still unconscious child in her arms. I thought the clearing had been silent earlier, but it was now dead quiet except for the sound of the engines. I became aware of my own breathing and the whir of the underground machine that powered the city, beating like a heart. The boilers of the mechs all hummed, but the sound was like a distant whisper, as if even they were holding their collective breaths. Jazz gently placed her child into the upturned arms of the mech. She reached down and kissed him on the forehead, and she turned and slowly walked away, her head held high. Without a word, Madame Throb turned and walked into the open mouth of the temple, parting the silent crowd. I allowed a glimmer of hope to fill me. If the kid was gone, then I could get out of this. I felt absurdly worried about the NPC child and horrified at what had just happened. But I was more concerned about not having a different child split my penis into two pieces with a glowing knife. I tested the bonds of the shoulder strap. Still, if I started punching some of these mechs in the face with my super wrist, surely they'd put a hole in me, killing me. I pulled up the debts tab. The debt was still listed, still active. Was Madame Throb going to kill poor little Gulch? And if so, would the debt go away then? I had to keep an eye on it. The moment the debt disappeared, I'd make my move. Any sooner and I'd likely die, suffer through the death sequence, and then reappear right here in the harness again, probably with my implants removed. A pair of clerics appeared and dragged the lifeless body of Stonegate away, leaving a streak of red on the tiles. I idly wondered if NPCs killed by NPCs stayed dead. This whole sequence had to have been programmed in here, hadn't it? If this was part of the main Groundling storyline, then he had to be dead, didn't he? I knew each individual NPC was run by an AI, but I didn't know how much of their actions were predetermined or not. Out of morbid curiosity, I pulled up my map, looking for the Chicken and Waffles and Upgrades shop here in Kinnegad. It wasn't there. Not rayed out like it was closed. It was just gone. The apothecary next door remained, but the circle of the shop no longer held any label at all. Pastor Brock returned to the clearing. He reached down and picked up the glowing knife, examining it. So, if Gulch can't perform the sacrament, I guess you gotta let me go. I agreed to let him do it, nobody else. That was the agreement. The cleric looked me in the eye.
Young Victus, are you still here?
I am.
A young boy hopped forward. This boy was about a year older than Gulch. He had a larger head, meaner features than the other boy.
Do you know the ceremony?
I do.
He handed the knife to the boy. I reached forward to shoot the boy like I had with Gulch, but I was hit with the paralysis spell the moment my hand left my body. It shot a meter out, sagged, and then slowly returned on its own to my wrist.
There is a prophecy that a worm surgeon will bring ruin to the Temple of the Chained Gods. I've never trusted your kind, and I will do all I can to make sure each and every one of you suffer. The sacrament is going to happen today. It is going to happen right now. Nothing is going to save you. Prepare yourself, demon.
Victus stepped forward, grabbing my left foot in his strong hand.
We start with the small toe.
He placed the knife against the tip of my frozen pinky toe. He pushed, and I felt the searing pain as the toe split into two, nail and all. He cut easily through the bone, as if it was made of unfired clay.
The first chamber has been amplified. 51 chambers to go.